This is things that can rattle your world. Cut down on my skivvies. Everything looked beautiful. The Bucks are so blessed. Could have finessed it. Home on right there. I had pickle. I had chips.
I'm the demographic for X-Lax.
Keep him from licking himself. That's important.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is that time again, Bucks fans, NFL fans, fans across the globe. It is time for the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports, the King of Pasco County, the Baron of Big Storm Beer, the legend of Bill Curry Ford, Ira Kaufman, the star of this podcast, the Ira Kaufman Podcast, presented by Bill Curry Ford. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee DeCamper of Joe Bucks Fan is here. Ira, we hope Cosmo's doing well. We hope you're well. We've got a fantastic podcast ahead. How are you?
Cosmo's a little subdued, gentlemen. He's wearing something they call the cone of shame. He's got a cone around his neck. Now, what the hell does a cone around your neck have to do with getting neutered? I don't understand that. I think it's maybe keep him from licking himself. I mean,
Bingo.
That's a problem we've all had on this podcast. You know, we the cone of shame, it's unbelievable. Here's my word of the day. Today's word is scalding. And by that, I don't mean this ridiculous rumor by Mike Lombardi, which we'll talk about later. But that refers to Honeymoon Island. Yes, we went to the beach. Look, you can't go the whole summer and live in Florida and not go to the beach. You'll get laughed out of the county. So we did go late in the afternoon. It was brutal out there. Heat index 105, no rain. Everything looked beautiful. Set up our brand new beach chairs, little canvas top for shade, beautiful. And cut down on my skivvies. Steve, we should have had a photo on that. Ran into the surf, the golden surf of Pinellas County beaches. And I was scalded by a gulf temperature of 91. 91? What are we going to be up to? 95 in September? It's out of control, DeCamper. It was like sitting in a sitz bath. I don't drive an hour to sit in a sitz bath.
What?
91 degrees in the Gulf? We got to drop a giant glacier in there. What's going on?
First of all, Ira, what is a sitz bath? Is that something like from 1946? What the hell is that?
It's similar to like a bidet or something. I don't know. But
I thought it was a sauna. You know, you go have a schwitz.
But Lee, 91 degrees in the Gulf on July 1st, that's a little scary.
Yeah, I know what you're getting at. If I was still in shape and still able to go diving, I would have loved that because you wouldn't have to wear any, you know, real thick wetsuits. That's good.
That's right.
Yeah, if it's this hot this early, that usually is bad news come August.
Yep.
Now, you said something that was both hilarious and appalling at the same time on Russo's show. I laughed out loud, but I couldn't believe this. You had a bone to pick with our good Governor DeSantis, and you insinuated he's getting marching orders from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and you further insinuated the state needs to be shut down again. But here's where this got, this was just wild to me. You were sitting there, Chris. We're all hunkered down in Florida, and I went to the beach. Like, whoa, 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 whoa! And I just picture one of your proud listeners living in Katy Kearney, Nebraska. Like, wait a minute, you're hunkered down at the beach. Where can I go? Where can you invite me?
I practiced
down at the beach.
Steve, I practiced social distancing. Nobody was near us. I was reading my Lindy's Pro Football magazine, of which I did the Buck preview. And thank God I didn't have to pick their record, but I had to break them down by position. We had a Publix Ultimate Sub. I had pickle. I had chips. Within 3 minutes, the birds were flying all over us. They were flocking. I thought somebody was making an Alfred Hitchcock remake over here. And but there was nobody around us, and we went in the water. And, yes, we did go in the 91-degree water, made sure nobody was around us. So, Steve, I'm going to make the case that we socially distanced on the beach. How do you like that, Isbitz?
You know, sounds like nonsense because whenever you go to the beach, aren't you 6 feet away from people anyway? Are you the guy who just puts his chair down next to somebody and says, hey, buddy, I'm your new pal this week? What is that?
Come on. Well, Steve, you could put your chair down and then you can't control what somebody else does.
Like all steals right. Your chair.
And you know, look, we got there 4 o'clock. That's what we do. We go there late and we stay. You know, towards the sunset, paid my $8, you know, I'm rolling in, people are leaving. And that's the way to do it, baby.
4 o'clock, you're sweating like a beast. All right, Ira. Now listen, your podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, and everybody's got to get to BillCurryFord.com, C-U-R-R-I-E, if they are shopping for a vehicle, for a truck, for a used car, for a new SUV, for something like you have, Ira, your 2020 cherry red Ford Escape with all the bells and whistles that you love so much.
Oh, hold on, Steve. Hold on right there. Speaking about my Escape, we took it to the beach yesterday, and we're lugging all this stuff, and what a pleasure it was to open up the back. All you got to do is put your leg down, you know, in the back and go forward with it, and it rises automatically, and you got an arms full of all these things, and it was a big help. So that's the first beach trip with the new Ford Escape, and it was outstanding.
Nice. What Ira's talking about, in case you don't have a clue, is he activated his sensor. He goes behind the vehicle, just waves his foot like a magic wand, and the back of the vehicle opens, and very easy for him to carry all his stuff out. Right, Ira?
Like a Matt Gay, all I got to do is put my right foot forward, except I'm a little more accurate than he is, and it worked.
Be careful about Matt Gay. Some people are awful thin-skinned about the subpar kicker for the Bucks.
All right, Sage. Now listen, Bill Curry Ford, General Manager Sean Sullivan, he's our friend. You need to ask for him. Email, phone, walk right into the dealership a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. They've got lifetime warranty on new vehicles and pre-owned vehicles, nearly all of them, BillCurryFord.com. Ira, before we get deeper into all these Bucks topics, of course we have to get to them to begin with. Let me throw this one out at you because it affects a ton of our listeners. It is landmark. The NFL has wiped out two preseason games. It's official. The NFL will be, according to Mr. Salguero down in Miami, they will be readjusting the schedule. So they'll be wiping out week one of the preseason, week four of the preseason. Remaining will be 2 and 3. However, the schedule will change because they're not going to let any team have two home games in the preseason and have some teams have zero. So
yeah,
the Buccaneers were scheduled weeks 2 and 3 in the preseason at home. That's not going to be the case. We'll get a schedule soon as to which week they'll be home, who that's going to be against, and what's going to change. But it's official now, Ira. Weeks 2 and 3 is all we're going to get for preseason. What do you think?
Lee, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm not sure it's going to matter to Buck fans about whether they have one home game and one road game, Lee, because I'm not sure there's going to be any fans in the stands. I mean, we're talking about August. Hopefully things will change in terms of therapeutics and vaccines and infection rates. But, Lee, we don't know that right now. As far as putting fans in the stands in August, I think that's problematical. That might be a long shot. So, look, I understand the way the league's thinking. I don't think fans are going to lose any sleep, Lee, if the Bucks are on the road for two preseason games. I don't. Now, you might have to adjust season ticket prices at that point. I mean, it's complicated. But I have no confidence at all that fans are going to be in the preseason. You know what it affects? It affects me at Big Storm Brewery, Lee. That's what it affects, because if the Bucks are on the road for a preseason game, I'll be at Big Storm Brewery and hopefully with a bunch of Buck fans practicing social distancing, Lee.
Well, who knows if we're going to need social distancing in bars at that time. But I don't think you're out of line saying that. I think it's sadly very much in play that there won't be any fans in the stadium. And if there is, maybe the only select fans. And how that works out, I think we've spoke about this before, maybe not on your podcast, but even Steve mentioned, I mean, if you're dropping, what, Steve, 30 grand on a luxury box, I'm just throwing a number out there, you want to see that game. And I think, you know, a luxury box is a different animal than sitting right in a lower bowl. Ira, I think your concerns are very valid. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I surely can't dismiss them either. And I've heard where the NFL is debating about if they do let fans in, that they must sign a waiver where they agree not to sue the NFL or the team or whomever if they come down with the virus. I've heard that.
Now, I think that's a formality, Steve. I would be shocked if that didn't happen. If there are fans in the stands, they will have to sign a waiver, because, Steve, this league's all about making money and avoiding liability. And you know that's right, Steve.
Yeah, Ira, look, they're not going to check your bag and then you'll sign a piece of paper. It's not going to be like that. Season ticket holders would get some sort of electronic waiver to sign for the whole season. You know, email us back. And it'll be sort of like if you turn over your ticket in, you know, your old school ticket, or you read the fine print on your electronic ticket, it'll tell you this can't be resold for in X, Y, and Z. You can't give it away for marketing purposes. That's why, Ira, all across Tampa, you don't have restaurants who say, hey, you know, come in and spend some. We'll give you a Bucks ticket in the upper deck. You're not allowed to market tickets for your own business gain. And so there's all these disclaimers with tickets. This would just become one more disclaimer to get into the stadium. Now, I don't know if it really means much because nobody really cares about those things anyway, but it would cover the NFL at least a little bit.
Lee, wouldn't you be shocked if we ever go back to a four-game preseason? I think this is going to be permanent.
Well, you just set me up perfectly, Ira. Thank you. That's why you're the sage. Before we started this podcast, NFL.com had a report. The NFLPA wants to eliminate preseason. No preseason games. Zero.
You mean going forward or just this year?
Well, I'm guessing if it's this year, it would be going forward, because that will prove that those games are needless and they pose a hazard, a injury hazard to players. So if my guess is if they get rid of them, that's going to open up the door to never have them again, because the NFLPA said, look, man, we don't need this. We don't need this. We have scrimmages during the season, not this year, of course. We have scrimmages during training camp. The coaches like those better. There's no need to put us through this injury risk. There's no need to have preseason games. And so my response to the NFLPA wanting to get rid of preseason games, at least this year, is power to the workers, comrade.
And, Steve, if it is permanent, if they adopt this PA plan, which I think it's a long shot that they totally eliminate it, but, Steve, if they do, I think there'd be a mad scramble among the 32 teams to set up scrimmages in the future, because I think there'd be a premium on hitting people other than your own uniform 2-3 weeks into training camp. I think it'd be a very competitive situation to have inter-squad scrimmages.
Yeah, the NFLPA part of this is interesting, because I think a lot of players would like to have a preseason game, and especially the guys on the bottom, and they have just the exact same vote as the guys on the top. I mean, it's an equal voting system. You don't have more power in the players' union because you're Aaron Rodgers. And also, you know, a lot of players, and I ran a story recently, Ira, looking back at Mike Evans, who sort of says he needs a preseason game, and he explained why. But I think the NFLPA is sort of using this opportunity right now to negotiate other things. They don't have all these coronavirus protocols, so they can use this now to gain leverage in other areas. And plus, preseason makes the league money. The players aren't always big on cutting the money, but I don't know. I would love to see, just it's my own creative thought, Ira, but I would love to see them have just one preseason game and make it six quarters. Just gear up for one game, and you'll be able to look at all the different guys and all the different levels of players, and make it six quarters, empty the bench, and then you're done with it.
That's 4 hours of football, Steve. Right up your alley, baby. 4 hours. Do it. And you break down that tape. You know, look, you guys mentioned in passing, and, you know, it's a point worth mentioning. Tom Brady doesn't need, five quarters of play in the preseason, but what about the sixth-round draft pick? I mean, it's tough to impress in training camp. I mean, the contact drills are very limited, and you got to be very disciplined in your approach in terms of safety, and that's where, you know, that's where a guy could stand out. So it's got ramifications, Lee. It's not cut and dry.
That's true. But I do know the coaches, and Arians is one of them that's outspoken, that they get more out of the scrimmages than they do the games.
Yeah, I think some of the coaches would even like just to have one, just to go through their processes for all the little things they do with their communication and the challenges and all that stuff. So, and of course, you got guys on both ends of the spectrum, like John Harbaugh, who goes all out in preseason, and then you've got, you know, Sean McVay, who doesn't play anybody in preseason. So, you know, it would be interesting to see what the coaches really thought. But I don't know. I hope they go down to one. I'd like to see one just for the fun of it anyway.
Considering John Harbaugh's resume, he may not be wrong. I mean, he's got the He's got the goods to back it up. He could be possibly the second best coach in the league. We all know who's number one, but he'd be on the short list for number two.
Steve made a great point about, you know, some of the coaches just want to go through a fake game, and that's what they are, fake games, just to, you know, get familiar with things, you know, whether it be the play calling, who's doing what. Obviously, you almost always have a new coach. Just get everything settled so you're ready to rock and roll come opening weekend. Isn't that how the Bucks figured out that Jeff Jagodzinski was no good for the organization? They had a run through at the stadium, and they figured out he couldn't even call a play. I mean, boy, am I right on that?
I believe you. I believe you. Your sentiments are right on there. If you can't call a play in August, I'm not letting you call a play in September. I'll say it like that.
Yeah, that was
it.
Yeah,
they had a dry run, right, at the stadium?
Well, it was 2009. He was the brand new offensive coordinator, and they got into a couple of preseason games, and they realized this guy can't call plays in the proper timetable. He can't do it, which is just a mind blowing. That's another. I mean, it's unthinkable piece of Bucks history, Ira.
Who the hell hired that guy, Steve? Who hired him? Wait a minute. You know, Raheem didn't hire him, did he?
He obviously took recommendations from Mark Dominic, and look what they ended up with, a guy who didn't know how to call plays. And then they decided to go with Jim Bates to run a two-gap defense and fatten up all the linemen who got too fat, and they scrapped the whole defense. It was just ridiculous.
Boy, that could be another reason to give Raheem another shot. Lee, he was doomed from the start.
I'm right with you, Ira. I think what he did that second year in 2010 that had them on the cusp of the playoffs, and if not for a bad call against Winslow, they may have been in the playoffs. Matter of fact, they would have. With that roster, winning 10 should have been 11 games with that roster. That's a hell of a coaching job. Unless we forget, he was 4-2 the next season, and then hell broke loose.
He was. And, Steve, the Glazers told me that after the 2010 season, I think March at the meetings in 2011, and I was talking to Joel about the previous season, even though they came up just short, even though they won 10 games, he told me that from an ownership standpoint, that's the most fun they've had as Buck owners, and they came aboard in 95, other than 2002, other than the championship season. That was the most thrilling and satisfying year. That's a hell of a statement for a season when you don't make the playoffs, Steve.
Sage, anybody can get a free inspection at their home from Florida's Elite Restoration. Mold grows fast, and too many homeowners, they have a leak, they wait too long to address issues, and then insurance claims can be a nightmare. You have to address it. You can't wait. You can't put it off. You have to call Florida's Elite Restoration. Florida's Elite Restoration. Get to their website. It's got the same name, floridaselite-restoration.com. Local company, 727-807-1005. You can call them 24/7, get to their website, floridaselite-restoration.com. But we talk about them being licensed mold remediation specialists, Ira. They will handle any disaster for you, fire, whatever it is. Call them. They're great people.
You know, Steve, you're absolutely right about this is a subject you can't put off. You can't put off mold. Lee, it's not like you gain 3 or 4 pounds, you can put off that diet for a few weeks. You know, nothing's going to happen. You can't mess around with mold. Lee, I just said that the Gulf of Mexico is 91 degrees. Can you imagine what sitting water is doing in this oppressive heat in your house or in your apartment? You can't fool around with mold, Lee. Otherwise, you're looking for major repairs, major.
Trained professionals, Florida's Elite Restoration, 24/7. They will come out, and they guarantee, Ira, 2 hours you'll get a response. So if you got a mold issue, it's 5 a.m., call them. You're going to hear back by 7. They're going to get out there. There are thermal imaging cameras, the whole thing that they do. No cost to check it out. floridaselite-restoration.com. Ira Antonio Brown, the chatter's been out there. You wrote a strong column saying stop the fake news. There's no chance Antonio Brown's coming here. And you don't like it. Forget about what you think is going to happen. You don't like any thought of Antonio Brown near this roster. I know Lee doesn't. What do you want to get out there, Ira?
I think there's a segment of Buck fans, guys, and I feel emboldened to say this, that all they want to do is look at the statistics and say, hey, we're adding a potential Hall of Fame receiver. How can we not do it? He's not going to ask for $15 million. Maybe we can get him for four. And what firepower, firepower. Well, everywhere Brady looks, he's got this guy, he's got this guy. That's a crazy way to look at this thing. It's the easiest thing in the world to blow this team up with a guy like this. First of all, you talk about guys that are divas that want the ball. He's the poster child right now. He is. He's the new version of Terrell Owens. I don't think he's as good as Owens, but close. Oh, and Owens bounced from team to team, and this guy's doing a hell of an impression. He's also not 27 anymore. I think it's a disastrous plan, and I think it really signals, if it happens, and I think there's a 2% chance of it happening, if it happens, I would be worried about Bruce Arians' clout at that point, because he did not have to be so unequivocal that I got no interest in Antonio Brown. He could have finessed it. You know, he could have done whatever he gave to whoever else you want to put on the team, the Devonta Freeman answer. We can't afford him. But no, he ripped on the guy. And to think that Mike Lombardi suggesting that he's going to be a Buccaneer and wouldn't be surprised, what the heck would that say about the power structure at one Buck place at that point, gentlemen?
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, first off, I don't think Brown's coming here. Like you said, Ira, Arians was so adamant that, you know, I took him at his word. If Brown somehow winds up on a roster, I think it demonstrates who's the shot caller.
That's dangerous, Lee. That's dangerous.
It is dangerous. Now, I wrote a story about Brown. I wasn't going to do it because, again, as I just stated, I thought it was over and shut case that Arians was so adamant it wasn't going to happen. But first it was JT DeBrick, then I had Lombardi piled on, because that made for good sports radio in the middle of July with nothing going on. And I do mean nothing going on outside of the NASCAR race here or there, or maybe a horse race somewhere. But when I heard today Mike Girardi, NFL Network, who I believe covered the Patriots for the NFL Network, so he got in there, and he had a Twitter this morning where he all but said the reason why these rumors are cropping up because Brady hasn't given up hope. And Brady still has contact with him, and Brady talks to him a lot. So to me, that put a little bit of meat on the bone, albeit very little. It put a little meat on the bone, like, you know, maybe this isn't completely dead yet. But like you, Ira, I think it's, to use one of your words, fluff. I think it's, at this point, mostly nonsense, and I don't think it's going to happen, nor should it happen. If the Bucks absolutely, positively have to have a name player that you're casual fan would recognize, maybe not even casual fan. If they have to have a name player, go get Jamal Adams. They can use Jamal Adams. They don't need Antonio Brown. They sure could use Jamal Adams.
Ira, I'm going to disagree with you wholeheartedly. And my blood is...
Hold on. I just dropped the phone because you don't agree with me, Steve. Hold on.
Ira, look, I think you're looking at this all wrong. I'll just put it out to you right there. You said, quote, the easiest thing in the world to blow this team up. And I think Antonio Brown, his situation, strictly comes down to money. If he's willing to play on an NFL minimum contract with some incentives that might could get him up to $4 million if he behaves and produces. But if he's willing to play for $1 million, I don't understand why you would just write this guy off. Because if he acts like a moron, you cut him. And it'd be the same as cutting some other clown who's making $1 million. That's not going to shake up the team if he doesn't behave through training camp or can only make it a couple of games. I don't buy it at all. What I do know, Ira, is that this team, okay, Pat Kerwin was discussing this in great detail the other day on SiriusXM NFL Radio. The Buccaneers, the only time they were really successful running the football was when they were in 11 personnel, three receivers and a tight end. They ran 221 times. That was their number one total carries, and they averaged 4.4 yards a carry and had six touchdowns. And he was diving into how Brady likes that personnel, no matter how much Arians wants to talk about, we're going to be in 12 personnel a lot with two tight ends and blah, blah, blah. They had great success, relatively speaking, in that personnel package. And that's because Chris Godwin is blocking like a madman in the slot, coming across, taking on defensive linemen. And you know what? If they want to keep doing that 11 personnel, if you can have Godwin in the slot like he was last year and have Antonio Brown on $1 million-plus incentives contract and Mike Evans, I want to win a freaking Super Bowl, Ira. I don't care about this guy's baggage in Pittsburgh. If he's willing to play cheap, put him on the freaking roster and cut him if he acts like a moron. And I hope Brady has a lot of pull. I don't know if he's got enough to bring in a guy Arians doesn't want, but I want this guy if he's willing to play on the cheap.
Lee, I don't know where to start. This podcast could be a 2-hour podcast just on this. Lee, let me make a couple of points, gentlemen. One, when Brown was restructured in Pittsburgh, it was 2017. It was the year before he quit on the Steelers. Mm-hmm. And in that contract, he became, Mr. DeKemper, the highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League. Number one, he stood above all his peers. And you could make a reasonable argument that he was the number one receiver in football. But my point was, he was the highest paid receiver. And he quit on Tomlin, Roethlisberger, DeCastro, Pouncey, and the rest of them. Mm-hmm. Disgraceful. He's not a good person. He's not a good guy, Lee. And nothing that Isbitz is going to come up with is going to change that. I'll lead you to this way, Lee. The Bucs are so blessed in Evans and Godwin to have two stud receivers who are not divas. Do you know what kind of a break that is for Arians? He hits his knees every night. thanking the good Lord for that, Lee. And that's an intangible. That's important. And Lee, you know I'm right. If Brown doesn't catch 100 balls, he's going to be miserable. Miserable. And now he's only making $4 million and not catching 100 balls. The reason he got pissed off in Pittsburgh wasn't his contract. It was Juju Schuster taking his catches away from him. I rest my case, Lee.
Oh, I'm not arguing with you. I'm in your boat. I really am. His last three contracts, this was the result. His last three teams. Quit, thrown off the team. That's all you need to know.
You better move on, Steve. You're losing this one. Move on.
Okay, Ira, you know, you just called Mr. Brown the next Terrell Owens, okay? You realize that at 33 years old, Terrell Owens, Mr. Malcontent, went to Dallas and racked up 1,000 yards 3 years in a row and big numbers, playing for who?
Bill Parcells wouldn't even call him by his name, Steve.
Yeah,
he wouldn't even use his name.
I don't give a crap. He was an all-pro with Bill Parcells because Bill Parcells, just like Bill Belichick did last year, realized this guy's an a-hole, but I still want him on my team. And Ira, I got to ask you, if Tom Brady wants this guy and trusts him, why? Why? If he saw firsthand and knows firsthand that this guy's a malcontent, Mr. Team Brady, why does Brady want him?
I don't understand it, Lee. They only played one game together. I mean, does Brady really know this guy? If Brady's really driving this train, Lee, I'm going to lose a little respect for number 12, a little bit.
Well, he was thrown off the Patriots.
He was.
It wasn't voluntary, I know that.
Ira, this is fun. This is fun. This is what football's all about, sitting here in July talking about it. The only thing missing right now is Big Storm beer in each of our hands. BigStormBrewery.com is where you want to go see all the core beers from Big Storm Brewery, Florida's best craft beer, and all the specialty beers. And this weekend is all about enjoying yourself. Ira could have used a beer at the beach, even though it's not allowed, but you know how that goes. Anyway, the Bromosa, the Tangerine IPA, is the new fantastic core beer from Big Storm Beer. There are others. We could sit here and rattle off a long list. You can get them. They deliver from the Clearwater and Odessa tap rooms. You can also pick them up there. And, of course, they are all over the place in stores all across Florida and beyond. BigStormBrewery.com has the Storm Tracker where you can punch in your zip code, find Big Storm Beer. You can also click on the big ad of Big Storm at JoeBucksFan.com, and that takes you right to the Storm Tracker. Try Big Storm Beer this weekend. Ira's favorite is the Tropic Pressure Florida Ale, but go with the Bromosa and enjoy yourself. Now, Ira, let us get back to Mr. Antonio Brown here, because you can have your Scotty Miller, okay? But if Antonio Brown is available. I'm serious, Ira. I'm not throwing some contrarian BS here. If he is available on the cheap, seriously on the cheap, like he might be forced into being, I don't have a problem with this at all because you can just cut him. I don't understand why everybody's so afraid to cut him. If the guy's an a-hole, cut him. What did you lose if he's cheap? But you know what? Every Bucks fan, I'm not going to say everyone, I'll say 75% of Bucks fans, if they signed Antonio Brown on the cheap with some incentives, they'd lose their freaking mind in ecstasy if he was on that roster.
You might be right about that, Steve, but it's not going to change my opinion. Lee, one more thing I want to throw out there. If the Buck roster was filled with wide receivers like New England has, or Carolina, or maybe even the 49ers, and you can get Antonio Brown for $4 million, Lee, I say jump on it, because he's going to catch 107 balls for 1,400 yards. That ain't going to happen in Tampa, nor should it. What are you going to do? Disrespect Evans and Godwin? Evans is on a Hall of Fame trajectory. What's this guy, chopped liver? So, Lee, you talk about the strength of the Bucks. Of course you're going to say Godwin and Evans. The first thing you're going to say. You might say run defense. You might say the linebackers are pretty good there. But, Lee, they don't need him. And he ain't worth the trouble. Steve sees no trouble. I see big trouble.
Again, I'm with you, Ira. If Brown is such this valuable commodity, why is he still unemployed on July 1st?
Because everybody knows about this guy. Except
and also, isn't he on the NFL warden Roger Goodell's watch list?
I believe he is. He's also on a 2-year probation, Steve. How do you like that? So you want him hanging around in Ybor City at 3 a.m, Steve?
How about this, Ira? How about you sign him with the intent of cutting him after Week 4 after he helps your team go 4-0? How about that? you want him on the Saints, Ira? How about that? You want him on the Saints?
Lee, I've never seen a guy make a case so strongly to get a guy and then in the next sentence say, hey, and then you cut him after 4 weeks. It's unbelievable.
I want to win games, Ira. I don't care about anything else at this point. We've been treated to terrible roster moves, bonehead ownership decisions. We just had to deal with 5 years of Jameis Winston and assorted shenanigans. If Antonio Brown's allowed to play and he's cheap, it all comes back to being cheap. I don't care. If he's a bad guy, get rid of him and send him on his way. All right. Enough.
Lee, they just threw for 5,000 yards, Lee, this team. 5,000 yards.
And they ran off the guy who pulled the trigger, too.
That was without Antonio Brown. How many more yards are you going to throw for? Come on, Steve. Come on.
All right, Ira. Okay. You tell me who's going to play that Perriman role.
Tyler Johnson.
Tyler Johnson. Okay.
Tyler Johnson.
All right. I got it. Yeah.
There you go.
Right. He wouldn't learn anything from Antonio Brown, who's known for practicing like an absolute lunatic. This guy practices. He's not your typical malcontent free agent. He practices like a nutcase when he decides to show up.
And so did Owens. And so did Owens. He did. And, Steve, to be fair, and I mentioned this in my column, you're probably stunned that I wrote this in the middle of a anti-Brown column, but he does give the Bucks a different dimension that they have in terms of yards after the catch. The guy is phenomenal about reaching the end zone. He's very strong at it and turning those quick slants, Lee, into long gains. And Mike Evans is not that player. He's just not.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm not going to out the guy, but I know there's someone in the Bucs press corps that really bothers him that Mike Evans doesn't get yakked. And to me, that's just over-the-top nitpicking.
I think it's nitpicking. Yeah. I do.
I mean, would it be better if the Bucks got yacked from Evans? Sure, but he's so stinking good, so what?
I'm with you.
Yeah, I've been listening all over town, as always, to various chatter about all things Bucks, Lee the same. And there's a lot of love out there, a lot of quiet love, some overt love, but it's growing. And I'll say I've heard it this week from Brady Quinn, Pat Kerwin, and LaDainian Tomlinson. There's a lot of love and a lot of intrigue out there for Keyshawn Vaughn out of Vanderbilt. There's a lot of people, a lot of people who really think this guy is a serious all-around back who, you know, they're not calling him the next all-pro, but who's a legitimate quality player. I'm getting a little excited, Ira.
Steve, if that happens and players stay healthy, that's two big ifs. Lee, this could be the very definition of an unstoppable offense. I mean, you know, the O-line protects Brady. That's another if. I mean, there's a bunch of ifs. But the talent would be there if Vaughn steps up as a legitimate NFL player. And we're not asking him to be Adrian Peterson in his prime. We're asking him, you know, to average 4.4 yards a carry, run for 8 touchdowns, and catch 45 balls. And if he does that, this is one hell of an offense on paper.
All right, I got to ask you, and I'm just for information. I'm not trying to ridicule you or mock you or needle you or anything. I'm just curious, just your point of view. You're the sage. You're a Hall of Fame voter. What do you consider an unstoppable offense? I know I have something in mind right now, but I'm just curious what you would think is an unstoppable offense. I have a team in mind.
I'd say the Rams, 99.
Yeah, that's what I would say. But you know what? Who did stop him?
You're right. You're right.
But I'm right with you, Ira. You know, when I think of an unstoppable offense, I'm thinking of a guy. You have a Hall of Fame running back as well as Hall of Fame receivers. That was an Hall of Fame quarterback too.
I would say the 2007 Patriots, Lee. 2007 yeah. Patriots. Brady in his prime. Randy Moss. I mean, what can you say? I don't think they had a Hall of Fame running back necessarily, but you know, that team was unstoppable, Steve. They might average 36, 37 points a game. I'm not sure what the number was, but I believe they set the all-time scoring record that season.
And the Giants stopped them, right?
Until the Giants. And how did the Giants do it, Lee? How teams always do it.
Hound Brady.
When they control the Patriots. Hound Brady.
Wanted to run this past you because this is a little bit intriguing and it goes to the Brady power structure. And I can't blame Brady for trying to exert all the influence he can because this might be his last year. He knows he wants to go down swinging and maybe he's watched his share of Scotty Miller film and is getting a little nervous. It's possible. It's possible. I mean, I know it's unlikely, but it's possible. Brady Quinn was saying that he thinks that Tom Brady is the ideal person to judge O.J. Howard and make a decision about his future. Are people going too far when it comes to Brady's power and the influence he might wield? And what happens, Ira, this is really what I wanted to ask you, what happens if Tom Brady takes a deep breath and marches into the ownership suite and says, I want Antonio Brown, I don't want this guy, we need to get things right. What happens?
Well, I will say this. Brady wields considerable clout. And he deserves it, Lee. I'm not going to take that away from him. Arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. Arguably the greatest winner of all time in professional football. I mean, what are you going to say, Lee? He's 30-10 in the playoffs. This is against the best teams of his era. 30-10. You know, 6 Super Bowls, 3 other appearances. Having said all that, Lee, I think if he is pushing for Antonio Brown, I think he's riding the wrong train, Lee. I don't think he knows the guy that well. They played all of one game together. You know, I don't think if that's true, I don't think Brady is thinking about your favorite word, Lee, chemistry in the locker room. Believe me, one bad apple could mess things up considerably. Look, guys, we've seen it with our own eyes. With the Swaggy Baker, and I'm not trying to compare Swaggy Baker and Antonio Brown in terms of accomplishment, but the guy set a bad example. He just did. And had an effect on his compatriot players.
Ira Glazers. Glazers, Ira Glazers. Tom Brady picks up the phone. He calls Ed Glazer and says, Ed, we need to talk. And I don't care what player it's about. What happens? And you think Brady has the foresight to realize, I got more power than Arians thinks I do.
I think Ed Glazer says to him, Lee, and he says it in a very respectful manner. He says, work it out with Bruce and Jason. Work it out. And if he thinks he's going to go over their head, that's a problem, Lee. If he's already talked to the guys and they don't agree with him, and then he goes to ownership, I don't like any of that. That's a bad movie script. You don't do that. You don't do it in corporate America. You don't do it in the military. You don't go over somebody's head behind their back. So I don't think he would do it, Steve. Here you are painting Brady with a horrible brush. How dare you, Isbits? How dare you?
I'm not sure it's so horrible that he wants what's best for the team. I don't know. That's kind of why you're paying him. You're not paying him to be a wallflower, but
I got nothing against him making his case in front of coach and general manager. I got no problem with that. You know, he deserves to be heard, and his opinion deserves to be considered. But Lee, in the end, those guys are the decision makers. What are they getting paid for if not that? So I think he's got to leave it at that, and I think he would.
Hopefully, he'll get Ira in a better mood. One of these hollering shows. I mean, I watch them so often because I'm looking for Bucks news. We all run together after a while. I can't remember if it was LeVar Arrington or Mark Schlereth or, you know, Shannon Sharp or pick your talking head. But one of these guys was discussing the Bucks, what with the Bucks formations, what they should use with all this talent they have, this receiving talent. Notice I didn't say running back. It's all this receiving talent. And I want to say this is LeVar Arrington, but they said what would really, really be scary, the Bucks ran a three tight end formation and ran all three of those tight ends out wide. They said as good as those guys are athletically, you put Gronk one-on-one against somebody or O.J. Howard or, for that matter, even Cam Brink one-on-one with the linebacker, that could be truly frightening. With Godwin or Evans also on the field, that could be truly frightening. And this afternoon, I'm assuming this happened today because Gronk posted the picture today. Gronk on Instagram has a picture of him lining up outside on the numbers at one of Brady's practices. And Brady's still wearing his helmet. I'm looking at the photo right now. And Gronk's comment on the Instagram post was, "Split me out wide."
If Arians goes five wide, which he did more than on one occasion during his 5 years in the desert, but if he decides to go five wide, Steve, five offensive linemen, and they're going to bring more than you can block, Brady will have to live up to his reputation as the master of the quick decision, and he's going to take a beating to boot, Steve. He may complete the ball for 11 yards to Cam Brate, but he's also going to get hit by a blitzing safety or a linebacker. So it will be interesting, Steve, about the five wides that Lee's suggesting that the Bucks use as a base offense at times. But you pay a price, Steve. There's a flip side to that. Yeah, it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on pass coverage. It does, because now you're using your third and fourth defensive backs, and most teams don't have two good ones. But it's a risk. It's a gamble. Hey, one point I want to make, Lee, because you monitor everything that's out there. Steve, you do too. And I want to thank you guys publicly for doing that, because I think that's the driving force behind the success of Joe Bucks Fan.
He does more than me, believe it or not.
Tell me if I'm wrong, guys. Tell me if I'm wrong. But, you know, and I can't be specific, but I'm hearing it more than from one person. No team's been talked about more than the Bucks. No team since Brady came aboard. There's no question about that. And everybody's weighing in and looking at the offense. And, you know, one thing that struck me, and I don't know if it's Brian Baldinger or Burleson or whoever, seems to be commenting on the Bucks. And a lot of times you hear this line, I don't know how you're going to stop that. They got a sneaky good offensive line. I keep hearing that, guys. Are they saying something that I'm not? A sneaky good offense? I see 45 sacks and a lousy running game. So, Steve, what am I missing here?
Look, we've been down this road before, Ira. The offensive line's not as bad as a lot of people think, and there's not a bunch of world beaters on there. And it's all part of the underlying blame Jameis crowd, because everybody just thinks that all the ills of the Bucks are on Jameis Winston, including those sacks. And sure, he held the ball too long sometimes, but yeah, we're going to find out exactly what the offensive line's made of this year, and they'll probably look a lot better because of Tom Brady. And if Keyshawn Vaughn is better than Peyton Barber, and Lord, please bless us with that fact.
And if
a little bar there, Steve.
And if Worf's works out well at right tackle, Lee, that'll help.
That's a huge question mark, and I'm not anti-Worf's in any way, shape, or form. Yeah, I mean, let's face it. Zoom meetings for preseason? Come on. He's virtually had no preseason, as have the rest of the rookies. There's been no preseason. No OTAs, no mini camp, none of that. you know, you always hear about offensive line. They need to gel together. They need to play together. They need to be on the same page. I think this virus wiping out minicamp, wiping out OTAs, may just really blow up Worf's rookie year. I hate to say it, but, you know, that's something that seems like a lot of people, myself included, are either glossing over or ignoring. I think that's going to be a significant issue.
You know, that's a guy, Steve, I'm looking at Worf's in terms of the preseason. Steve, in that second game, which might be the equivalent of the fourth game in a normal year, where you're not playing any starters, I'm playing Worf's in the week two of the preseason, Steve. I'm giving him practice against another team because, and I've talked about this guy before, maybe I'm overrating him. I don't think I am. Cam freaking Jordan is waiting for Mr. Worf's in the Superdome in week one. And week two is Carolina. They just drafted seven defensive players, including a bunch of guys up front, including Derek Brown. And they got Brian Burns. They can rush the passer. So, you know, I'm not worried about Worf's as a road grader. I'm really not. But there are some left ends in this league that can rush the passer. I think he needs as much work as you can throw his way, Steve. I'm not sitting Worf's in that last preseason game. I'm not doing that.
Well, now there are only two preseason games, as we spoke about earlier. I'm not worried about Worf's, except I agree with Lee. I'm worried about all the rookies because this is unprecedented. We had the lockout year, but at least in the lockout year, you could have joint practices against another team, and you had four preseason games. Now, you've got no joint practices by rule, and you've got two preseason games. That's a rough sledding for a rookie who's got to jump out there against, as you said, the Saints on week one. They're going to give him a lot of help, though, but you know it should affect really all the rookies. But I'll say this again, Iron, we're not going to dwell on it, but Pete Carroll came out the other day and spoke about how they absolutely crushed the Zoom offseason, and they did all these things, and they killed it, and he is so fired up about how much work they got done. Now, I know Pete Carroll is an excitable guy, but I bet you there's some truth in there, Ira, that we're going to find out the Bucs didn't measure up to some of these other teams. I'm monitoring that for you, Ira. Listen, your podcast, it's available. Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Play. People can subscribe there, get a free alert. Most people listen on JoeBucsFan.com. They're all over the world listening to you, Ira. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, of course, Bill Curry Ford. July is here, and the summer savings continue to roll on. General Manager Sean Sullivan, he's there for you. No stress. Just reach out with a question. So many people have car questions. I've hit Sean with questions about repairs and all kinds of things. He is there for you. You can email him. It's on their website, BillCurryFord.com. Click on staff. You'll find Sean, and you'll get the great family service there. Our thanks to Big Storm Beer. Drink it responsibly, but drink it, enjoy it. And Florida's Elite Restoration, that's who you call if you have a disaster. Call them first, floridaselite restoration.com.
Ira, I got a couple things here to ask you before you regale us with some of your favorite stories of the 4th of July in Brooklyn. Carl Reiner died, Ira. He's a legend in Hollywood. Your thoughts?
He was the guy that discovered Mary Tyler Moore. I've been watching some video clips of tributes to Reiner, and they show him, on shows where he told the story about auditioning women for the part of Laura Petrie, Dick Van Dyke's wife. And he said they had seen 23 actresses trying out for the role, and he was ready to give up. I can't find my Laura Petrie. And in came Mary Tyler Moore. Nobody had really heard of her. She'd done some commercials. And she looked great, and she passed the eye test, Lee. And then Reiner gave, page 12 of a script and asked her to read this one line. She read one word, according to Carl Reiner. One word. And he stopped her, and he walked over to her, and he put his hand over her head, and he describes it like, you know that claw that comes down in those vending machines, Lee, in an arcade? And he put his hand over her head, and he walked her down the hall of the studio into the executive producer's, I think the guy's name was Sheldon Leonard. who was involved in a lot of shows, the Danny Thomas show. Anyway, he walked in, he opened the door. Leonard was sitting behind his desk, and Reiner said to Sheldon Leonard, "We found our Laura Petrie." One word. She was phenomenal, and Reiner was phenomenal.
Three words when I think of Carl Reiner. Shut up, Mel.
Shut up, Mel. And Richard Deacon, I believe, was the actor who played Mel Cooley. Yeah, sort of a sad sack guy.
That was Lumpy's dad.
Oh, that was Lumpy. Yeah, I think that's right. I believe that's right.
Lumpy's dad. And speaking of dad, Carl Reiner was the father of Meathead. All in the Family thing.
Of course, his sons, Rob Reiner, played the Meathead on All in the Family. And a very distinguished Hollywood director. Did a few Good Men, When Harry Met Sally. But, Lee, in that movie, When Harry Met Sally, Billy Crystal, Meg Ryan, there's a very famous scene in the middle of the picture where Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan are talking about men and women in the bedroom and this and that, and how to fake ecstasy. And Billy Crystal says to Meg Ryan, you can't fake it. And she says, oh, no? Yeah, they're in like a New York deli or something.
It's Cats. And they filmed that at Cats.
Yeah, Cats. And so she went into all these gyrations about an orgasm and this and that. And then the waitress comes by and there's a woman there and says, what would you like? And she says, I'll have what she's having. That was Carl Reiner's wife.
Oh, is that right?
That was Carl and the mother of Rob Reiner. That was her.
I had no clue. Okay, here's another landmark comedy. And I am so looking forward to this. This was one of my favorite comedies. This was a landmark comedy, and it's coming back. Your thoughts on the news, the return of Beavis and Butthead.
I thought you were talking about Curb Your Enthusiasm. Oh, my God. Beavis and Butthead. You know, it sounds like we're making a joke about it.
No, it's true.
But I'm saying these shows.
Ira, that's what we used to call you and Cummings when you were at the Tribune.
They pack a wallop. Who invited Isbitz back on this podcast, Lee? I know I didn't. But, you know, things like The Simpsons, very incisive commentary, Beavis and Butthead. You can take it at different levels. I mean, you know, if you're 12 years old, you can watch it and not understand the deeper levels. If you're 12 or you're Steve Isbitz, you take it at surface value. But guys like me and DeKemper, we go deeper on these things.
And lastly, you know, I thought you were going to jump out of your chair when I was listening to you on Russo's show. When he didn't insinuate, he claimed you were from Long Island.
He did. He mixed me up with my wife. And, of course, he grew up on Long Island. He thought I was from Long Island.
Were you outraged? You seemed like you were
outraged. Yeah. I mean, you never mistake. Does this sound like a Long Island accent or a Brooklyn accent? Now, come on. And I tell people, Steve, I tell people that I have more of a Brooklyn accent after 35 years in the Sunshine State than I did when I was roaming the streets of Weehawken, New Jersey. How does that happen, Steve?
Ira, July 4th is here. If you want to tell us a little bit about what it was like in Brooklyn on July 4th, we'll go out on that. And we wish everybody a safe 4th and a safe time always.
Guys, picture this. The summer of 1966, the young sage is 12 years old, prowling the streets of Brooklyn, and across the street from our third floor walk-up, with no air conditioning, by the way, and splitting a bedroom with my older brother, Barry. We had a fold-out bed, you know, the one that you fold back in when you're done with it, under the other one, and fold it. And so one of the beds was right in front of the window, the courtyard window. And when I was about 4 years old, my brother's 8, and he says to me, "Hey, Ira, you know what I'm going to do? In the winter, you can have the bed next to the window. In the summer, I'll do it." Now, what am I going to do? At 4 years old, I can't come up with a counter argument. So that's what I went through, gentlemen. So back to the summer of 66, The Lovin' Spoonful on top of the charts with Summer in the City, and the Beatles with Norwegian Wood. And there's a guy out across the street named Joey Lobianco. Joey Lobianco. That's capital B in Lobianco.
Not the guy, the actor.
No, not the actor. He had the whole neighborhood scared because in his wallet. He had a, you turn at the back of his wallet, he had a wasp. He had a dead wasp in the back of his wallet. That we thought that was a bad omen. Well, anyway, July 4th would roll around, and everybody would gather around Joey Lobianco because he put on a display of cherry bombs and ash cans, gentlemen. Those were the days. This is not firecrackers. This is things that can rattle your world. And he put, you know, a cherry bomb in a can, and it would blow up the can. And we were so crazy back then. We didn't worry about somebody blowing their hand off. Thankfully, it didn't happen. We didn't have – JPP wasn't in the neighborhood at that time. But I want you guys to go to bed tonight thinking about Joey Lobianco.